Ah, you've come back. I was hoping you would. There's something in the air tonight. Do you feel it? That sharpness behind the breeze, like a string being plucked? That's how you know the world is about to shift. This is the fourth part of my tale. Perseus' tale, really, though he still wouldn't have called it that. He was just walking then, just surviving. But stories don't wait for you to feel ready. He had left Seraphos behind, left his mother, the lie, the king, the boy he had been. Now he walked lands the gods barely touched anymore. Wild places, empty places, places older than fear. The stars changed above him, the birds grew stranger, and still, he kept going. Do you know what I remember most? How small he looked against the sky. But he didn't shrink, not once. That's rare in mortals. He had no army, no map, just the name of a riddle, Graye, and a direction that felt more like a guess than a plan. But the gods were watching now. Not helping, not yet. But watching. That's how it begins. You can always feel it if you're quiet. The way the wind tugs harder at your cloak. The way the animals pause and watch too long. The way your dreams get louder. He crossed mountains crusted with frost and valleys that whispered in their sleep. He drank from streams cold enough to sting. Ate fruit he couldn't name. Once he spoke aloud to a stone just to hear a voice. And the stone whispered back. He never told anyone that. But I was listening. By the time he reached the dark hollow where the gray eye were said to dwell, his face had thinned, his arms had hardened. His eyes no longer darted, they tracked. He wasn't ready, but readiness is overrated. The thread was pulling tight now, and someone was waiting just ahead. Not a monster, not yet. Three sisters, one eye, and the price of knowledge, shall we go meet them? They're waiting in the dark, and they don't like to be kept. They lived where the land forgot light. A hollow so still it felt carved, not formed, cut into the bone of the earth like a memory no one speaks of, but never quite forgets. Perseus didn't announce himself. He crept. The air was thick with rot and salt and something older, like the inside of a sealed jar. And then he saw them. The Graye. Three crones, bent and creased and ancient enough to make the rocks seem young. Their skin hung loose and gray as old parchment. Their hair was wiry, sea-wind white, and between them in trembling hands they passed a single eye. One eye. One tooth. That was all they needed, because they had each other. And secrets older than Olympus. Perseus watched. Waited. You see, he didn't rush in sword drawn. He had no sword. He had something better. The gift of watching. He waited until the eye left one hand and had not yet reached the next. And then he took it. Just like that. Swift as a hawk's strike. Their shrieks cracked the air. Blind, furious, keening. They clawed the dark, cursed him in words that scraped like bones. You dare! Give it back! Thief! But Perseus didn't flinch. He held the eye high. I don't want your lives, only your guidance. Silence fell like ash. Then laughter. Dry, wheezing, bitter as wormwood. You think you're the first? One rasped. You think gods will favor you? Another hissed. You think this ends well? Perseus stood his ground. His voice did not tremble. I think I don't have a choice. Ah, that was the answer. That was the one they couldn't mock. Because it was true. The Graye know what it means to be caught in the jaws of prophecy. Fine, they spat. You want the path? Then listen, boy. They told him of a place where the sky bends low, where nymphs guard what gods have hidden. They told him of the gifts, sandals that defy gravity, a helm that erases presence, a shield polished so fine it remembers every face it sees. They told him of Medusa and her sisters, and how death was not the worst thing waiting. When they were done, he gave back the eye, gently. One of them, he never knew which, caught his hand with clawed fingers. You will not survive this. I might, he said, and walked away before he could hear what else they whispered. Bravery isn't always loud. Sometimes it's just refusing to run. Are you ready to see the gifts? They're waiting at the edge of the world. No one agrees where the place truly is. Some say it's a garden. Some say it's a cave. Some say it isn't a place at all, but a moment. The kind you only find when you've given everything else away. But Perseus found it. I don't know how long he wandered. The path bends in ways mortals weren't meant to follow. Days and nights blurred together. The world grew quiet, thin. Sometimes he felt eyes on his back, sometimes wings overhead. And then he stepped into it. It was not grand, not golden, just still. A pool of clear water ringed by olive trees older than myth. A breeze that moved nothing, and three figures standing among the shadows, barely separate from the air itself. The nymphs. They didn't speak, not with mouths. They didn't ask his name. They already knew it. They looked at him, and in that gaze, he felt everything. The weight of his blood, his mother's sorrow, his lie, his pride, his thread stretching into the dark. And still, they handed him the gifts. Not as a reward, not as a blessing. As a necessity. First, the sandals. Light as breath, wrapped in leather and laced with impossible flight. He held them in his hands, and the earth felt jealous of him. Then, the satchel. A strange little thing, humming faintly. It could hold what should never be carried. You'll understand soon. Next, the helm. Do you know what a helm is? No, it's not the steering wheel on a boat. It's a helmet you put on your head. But this one was different. Dark, simple, cold to the touch. Not evil, just forgotten. A thing made for vanishing, for slipping through the world without stirring its fabric. The gods don't always win with thunder. Sometimes they win by becoming silence. The person who wore this helm, yes, we will stick with that word, they became invisible. And finally, the shield. No metal gleam, no warrior's flourish, just a polished surface so clear he could see his reflection as if it were someone else staring back. I won't lie, that gift unnerved him the most. They gave him no warnings, no riddles, only the tools. Because that's how the gods speak when they mean it. I remember watching him take those things into his arms like they might vanish if he blinked. He didn't thank the nymphs, and they didn't expect it. He simply nodded, tied the sandals on, sighed, and for the first time since the feast, the boast, the lie, he smiled. Just a little. You see, the gods don't give answers. They give tools, and then they watch. Ready to see what he does with them? I think this is the part where you'll begin to see him not just as a boy, but as something else. Something the world will remember. He didn't fly right away. He sat beside the pool, the gifts laid out before him like offerings or choices. The satchel, the helm, the sandals, and the shield. He picked it up last. It caught the water's light, the curve of the trees, the lines of his own face, but not the face he'd seen in streams or polished bronze. This was clearer, crueler, maybe, truer. He studied it for a long time. He had always looked like Dana, her brow, her mouth, the steady set of her gaze. But now there was something else in his reflection. Tension. Precision. A new kind of silence. It wasn't a warrior's face. Not yet, but it was no longer a child's. He tilted the shield, catching the sun. It flared. He flinched, and then he laughed. Just once. Short. Surprised. I'll be blind before I even see her, he muttered. I remember that. That little flicker of humor in the middle of all that weight. That's when I knew he hadn't lost himself. Not fully. Not yet. He tested the sandals next. One step, and the earth vanished beneath him. He gasped, stumbled, caught himself. The air held him. It didn't lift him. Not at first. It waited. Another step, a little higher. The wind curled around his legs like it had been waiting for him, too. He hovered there, just above the earth, and looked down at the gifts. Not trophies, not decorations, tools, tasks. I don't think anyone had told him yet what a hunter really is. It isn't about the kill. It's about seeing something no one else dares to look at, about moving so quietly, even your fear forgets to follow, about knowing exactly when to strike and exactly when not to. He understood that, just barely, just enough. When he lowered the helm over his head, the world forgot him. The birds went still. The air paused. Even the water rippled as if unsure whether he was real. He took it off slowly, breathed in, looked one last time at his reflection, not to admire it, to remember it, because soon he would only be seen in shadow, and then in stone. Can you remember the first time you saw yourself not as you were, but as you could become? That was this moment for him. And when he stood, truly stood, not as a boy, but as a blade given purpose, the pool behind him barely stirred. He gathered the gifts, wrapped the shield, tied the satchel to his belt, and faced the wind. It knew where to take him. It always had. Would you like to see how he moves now? He's not walking anymore. The place wasn't on any map. You could fly for days and miss it entirely if you didn't know how to look sideways at the world. But he found it. A wasteland of petrified things, creatures stopped mid-motion, mouths open, wings half-beating, claws still curled. Not broken. Just caught. Frozen not by cold, but by one gaze. One unbearable truth made flesh. The Gorgon's lair. There were three of them, though only one mattered now. Stheno and Uriel and, yes, Medusa. Perseus hovered just above the earth, sandals still and silent. He did not land. Not yet. The air here was heavy with old magic. It coiled around his skin, pressed against his chest like the weight of unspoken things. He saw no movement, but he felt breath, and deep beneath the stone, the low, slow beat of monstrous hearts. He didn't reach for his sword, he didn't have one, but the shield, he unslung it, held it in both hands, its polished face turned outward away. He didn't look into it, not yet. Above him, the sky dulled, as if even the sun didn't dare look down, and there, just inside the mouth of the cavern, shadowed, coiled, and utterly still, something dreamed, not a nightmare, not a roar, just a dream, long and deep and full of silence. Her breath moved pebbles. Perseus stood at the edge. This, I think, was the quietest moment of all. Not the fight, not the flight. This, the moment before. And I held my breath with him, because I knew what came next. The sandals would lift, the shield would rise, the satchel would open, and the thread would pull tight enough to cut. But that's not this chapter. This one ends in stillness. A boy, no longer a boy, standing in the mouth of the world's oldest danger and choosing to go forward anyway. The Gorgons were waiting. And now, so are we. Much love. I am Harmonia. Oh, before you go, one more thing. Traveler, if you enjoyed our time together in the halls of Olympus, there's a gift you can give in return. Just a little thing. Leave a 5-star rating and share this podcast with a friend or whisper it to the wind. The gods love a good rumor. And if you're curious about the mortal world, its twists, its triumphs, its tangled histories, come find me in my other podcast, History's Arrow. There, we follow the path of humanity, one story at a time. Until next time, walk wisely, speak kindly, and never underestimate the power of a good story. Your friend, Harmonia. This podcast sails out to you from Red Buoy Media, LLC. The stories we share are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 4.0 international. That means you can pass them along, remix them, and even argue with them. Just give us credit, don't try to sell them, and share responsibly. Thanks for listening, friend. Until our next adventure.